Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, June 8th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. Check out Slingbox at a Best Buy near you or at slingbox.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Becky Worley.
And this is the show where we try to make some sense out of all that stuff that's happening in the technology world and break it down for you as much as possible. Just me and Becky today, along with our producer, Eric Lanigan. Hey, Eric.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going well. Has everyone recovered from your iPhone experiences yesterday?
I'm still iPhone 4 drunk.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, I was doing live shots this morning for GMA, so actually I went back to bed at 7 a.m., and I only got up a couple hours ago. So I'm like in an iPhone 4 time zone.
Yeah. You're just living and breathing iPhone 4.
Are you gonna dollar short?
Do you think you'll get one?
I am gonna upgrade myself personally. I've been waiting.
What do you have now?
3GS.
All right.
So yeah, I'll upgrade, and I've been waiting to do that. So yeah.
Well, meanwhile, there is other news in the world today. For instance, those of you who have DirecTV may have turned on your television this morning and not been able to change the channel or get much anything done.
Yeah, we got I got a tweet from one of our listeners who said, "Hey, DirecTV has bricked all of their HD receivers, DVRs, installing an update overnight." And I don't think it was all, because I have an HD DVR and I didn't get hit, but Tom, you did. Basically, what happened is they were putting on this new service called Whole Home DVR service. It's a $3 upgrade that you can choose. It gives you some interesting features, DVR controls in every room, stop a recorded show in one room, continue watching in a different room, manage your playlist from any connected room, stuff like that. But it was an upgrade that went horribly wrong. It hit you, Tom. What were the symptoms?
Well, the symptoms for me, I for some reason, some people weren't seeing anything. It was just bricked. It wouldn't work. I was actually able to watch Channel 7, ABC, here in San Francisco area, and not anything else.
I actually did that to you. I just wanted your TV stuck on ABC when it was on this morning. That was me.
I know, wanted to look away. I wanted to do something else.
So I couldn't do anything with the channel. I couldn't get the guide or my list of recorded programs or anything like that. Apparently, the solution has been to unplug and repower up the unit twice. So you have to unplug it for at least 15 seconds and then plug it back in, let it boot back up, then unplug it again for at least 15 seconds, then plug it in and let it boot back up. And then that apparently fixed it. Although DirecTV says they've now fixed the issue entirely. So I don't know if they've pushed out a fix or what.
I contacted them and they said that they did push out a fix, and they were very choice and succinct in their answers to my question, aka not terribly forthcoming. But Robert Mercer over at DirecTV said there was a transmission glitch that occurred early this morning affecting some of our HD DVRs. He wouldn't answer how many people were affected. They apologized to our customers for any inconvenience this has caused them, but they say it's all back to normal. It's been fixed.
Okay. So if you left home this morning and your TV was working fine, it should be fine when you get home. You'll never know anything happened.
Well, not necessarily. Is there any guarantee that anything you were recording at that time actually recorded?
Oh, yeah. If your soaps are gone.
Well, Ina Fried over at CNET, she was very upset. She had some sporting events scheduled.
Oh, right. The World Series, the college softball World Series.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, this is a disrupt on the softball fans of America.
Absolutely.
Good thing it didn't happen when World Cup had started. That would have been an
awful. You would have had riots. DirecTV would be in flames today. Microsoft.
By the way, it was also the Google search hot trend search of the day starting this morning was DirecTV customer service number. So you know their lines were flooded and they got hammered.
Even if they won't admit it, it affected a few people, apparently. Yeah. Microsoft Office web apps are available today. You can go to office.live.com and check them out for yourself. You get Word, PowerPoint, Excel, and OneNote documents right in your web browser through Windows Live SkyDrive. And this is going to be good when the new Office comes out. Or if you're using the beta, you can try it right now because it's all integrated into Office 2010. So that you can open docs in either the application or the web and save them back and forth. Did you try it out?
Yeah, I went to it. It was basically Google Docs. And, you know, when we talked about it a little bit before the show, you made the really good point that the point is you can open in either the application or a browser. And so I think that's an excellent, reason. If you're looking for a sort of cloud solution to your documents, Excel, et cetera, and you want that functionality, that seems like a good option.
Yeah, I played around mostly with Excel because that's what I use Google Docs most for, is spreadsheets, and it felt like I was using Excel. I missed Google Docs a little bit because there are certain things that Google Docs does that are quirky that I've gotten used to, you know, how it handles moving cells around and inserting things and all that. But, you know, it was very familiar if dumbed down a bit. It certainly didn't have all the features of Excel, but it worked smoothly. I'll give it that. It didn't feel like a web app.
Mm-mm, it wasn't clunky. It didn't feel any latency when I was using it. So, you know, pretty seamless.
Yeah. Also, today, you found this in the Advertising Age. There was more from Steve Jobs yesterday than just the keynote, right?
Yeah, I just thought it was worth going back and doing a little bit of the business stories that came out of WWDC, specifically when Steve Jobs was talking to web developers. So specifically, they say they've paid out $1 billion in revenue to app designers and app makers. $1 billion mark is big, and I think it was a real point of pride for Steve Jobs as being a part of the digital economy now. Secondly, they talked a lot about iAds, which is their platform for mobile advertising for app developers and in-app advertising on iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch. Basically, he said they've sold $60 million in iAds already to companies like Disney, Nike, Target, Unilever, big companies. And then when Steve Jobs demoed how these would work, his big point to the developers was that when ads launch, they will keep the user in the app. It doesn't redirect you to a browser and take you out of the app. So that's really big for developers.
Also use up your bandwidth, but you know, now that AT&T's metering it.
Well, it's a good point. And also I had to note that when he first opened up, he used as the demo point Nissan's new ad for their Leaf, their electronic vehicle that's coming out. And you had to physically choose it. It took a second to launch the video. Then there was an interactive sort of like an investigation almost, if you were going to dig around and find out more facts about the car. Then there was an interactive game, and you could pre-order the Leaf if you wanted to. It was so immersive, but you'd have to choose to do that. It's like a level of engagement with an ad that I'm not so sure a lot of people are going to take advantage of, but that's a different, bigger question.
Did Steve order one?
He did.
He did.
I don't know if it's for real, but hey, we'll see.
How green of him.
Yeah. You know,
iAd is blocking out Google now. They've allowed third parties to come into iAd, but the way they wrote the rules prevent Google from taking part in it.
Huh. The article in Ad Age was talking about how Google is actually very positive on iAds because they think that it sets precedent and will speed their, you know, the whole ad mob thing, and that being a regulatory issue, will go away.
Yeah, exactly. It's good for them because it means there's competition, so they can't be accused of being a monopoly.
Right, exactly. So that's right. The business from WWDC.
Let's give them the business. New York Times asked Apple to pull the popular Pulse iPad news reader after it was demonstrated and used as an example of the cool apps you can use on the iPad by Steve Jobs yesterday.
Really popular reader for the iPad. And the New York Times was, you know, said that it infringed upon their rights. And I didn't quite get it. Like, what made this different from any other RSS reader or any other reader?
Yeah, it's just an RSS reader. All it does is it pulls in the headlines and the descriptions that New York Times makes public for anyone to subscribe to. It's just an RSS reader that's pretty, because it pulls it in into a nice interface, and then you can click through, and it's got a browser built in. So what is New York Times' objection to this?
Right. So I called the New York Times, and they gave me a written statement, and here's what they said. This is from Diane McNulty at the New York Times. The terms of use on our RSS feed makes it clear that the RSS feeds are available for non-commercial use only. By charging for an app, $3.99, that gives users access to our feeds, they're violating that provisions of the terms of use. Furthermore, when a user clicks on a story in the News Pulse Reader, it takes them to NewYorkTimes.com site, but it's framed within the News Pulse Reader app browser, as opposed to taking them directly to our site. So that's their second point. That they say is also a violation of the terms of use. And finally, they say they're using the New York Times name and content to promote their app, particularly because the Times RSS feed comes preloaded on the app and we're featured in their demo video. And oh yeah, they were demoed yesterday in the WWDC keynote. So
they
have 3 points.
I'll give them the third point. Like, if you're using somebody else's name to promote your own product without permission, then they shouldn't pull the app. They should just tell them to stop doing that. Cease and desist would suffice for that. The first 2 points, though, I mean, are they going to go after every RSS reader that is sold now? Because lots of RSS readers are sold both on computers and in smartphone stores. There's tons of RSS readers that you pay for and that you can use then to get the New York Times. I don't see how that they have a leg to stand on there.
I agree with you. You know, if you choose to read it in another app and you're willing to pay for it, I don't think that should be a problem. Now, it is a violation of their terms of service, the way it's written, but in terms of more objectively, I don't see that as a problem. But I do see it as a problem if you're taking someone to the New York Times site and you're putting it in a frame.
Have you seen what it does? It's just the WebKit engine, the Safari engine, inside the app. So instead of forcing you to go out of the app into Safari, it pulls up the actual web page. And the web page is not changed or modified in any way. There's not like ads for Pulse around it. It just pulls up a page. And you can actually use the New York Times site, and it delivers all the New York Times ads right in that frame. So again, I'm not sure what they're objecting to here, except for free publicity for the New York Times.
Well, I think that 2 points there. One, I think it is better for the user to stay within the app. I got no beef with that from a user perspective. But when you look at it from a business model perspective, it's the precedent. So if the New York Times says, okay, Pulse, we know that you're going to handle it right, and we're going to let you do this, even though you're prominently violating our terms of service, I think that's a problem, because then you set precedent to let somebody else who's going to make a mess of your site with a frame take over and gain revenue on a click-by-click basis from you. I think that's a problem.
Yeah, the upshot is Pulse is back. It's in the store. It still has the New York Times in it. It's still an RSS reader. They've changed the description, so it doesn't use the New York Times to promote them. That seems to tell me that that's what they were really upset about, and they used these other terms of use to kind of force the issue. But
interesting.
You're gonna have to stop people from using software if you say, oh, you can't use RSS reader in these kinds of situations, because, I mean, you know, what's the difference between that browser that's built into Pulse and Opera on the iPhone or something like that?
You know, this is all just another skirmish in the ongoing war for big media and old media to figure out how to interface with new media and still have a revenue stream. So I think this is a symptom. I don't think it's a trend. It's hard to know what place this will play as all these, you know, the battle continues.
Let's take a break from the war, though. Don't you need to get away from the war? Maybe watch some of your favorite television programs on your iPhone, even though you're not at home. Well, for that, you'll want Slingbox. This episode is brought to you by Slingbox. Slingbox lets you watch your home TV anywhere you go. iPhone, iPod Touch, BlackBerry, laptop, MacBook. You go to BestBuy.com, you buy a Slingbox. You take it home, you plug it in to your internet, you plug it into your TV. It's pretty simple. And then you hook up your Slingbox to your Slingbox software on your mobile phone or your laptop. And then wherever you go, you can watch all the TV that you have at home on your device. Programs you watch live or recorded. Even your DVR programs are available there. So check it out. Go to Best Buy and pick up a Slingbox. Or you can go to slingbox.com/twit. On to our next story, which is military tapping social networking to hunt insurgents. So this is really interesting because it's almost Ender's Game-like, except it's not video games. It's social networking. It's chatting. It's what people are doing right now while they watch TNT record live. They're using it to help prevent military units from being exploded and running into bombs and into sniper's nests, and even in some cases from shooting innocents.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It seems like it's their own client that they've got going on the background while you have extraordinarily remote analysts looking at primary sources coming in from the front lines. And then there's this open channel of communication so that they can share information in a more casual way. And this story is coming from the New York Times, because we should cite it. But it was really interesting when they were talking about how not only is this a format that works in this context where you have all these media feed coming in, all this information coming in, but that one of the things that makes this work is that not only is it formal communication that's canonized in terms of we think we see someone who is, they call them children, who is a non-combatant, and that you should abort an air drone strike or something to that nature, but they also have no problem, the military has said they have no problem with casual personal conversation going on, because given the distance between these analysts who are in Sacramento or Tennessee, and the people who are on the ground over in the combat zone, that they really need tools to help them forge personal relationships so that they can make better decisions as a group. And I think this speaks to the new army, to, you know, moving forward with technology, accepting the human softer side of how organizational efficiency works. And I think it's pretty cool.
There's about 4,000 of these analysts right now, and they're going to hire 2,100 more. And it's mostly people who are familiar with this kind of behavior, who know how to manage this sort of chat room, Twitter, social networking kind of. They call it social networking in this story, but it's really just chat room behavior.
Yeah,
it sounds like to me.
Yeah, when I saw that, I wondered why is it social networking? Why is this all being used with people like under 25 who supposedly have these skills with Facebook and MySpace and chat rooms growing up? I mean, it's just like they said, it's just a basic, almost command line screen, and they got like four
just
like
of those. An IRC client.
Yeah,
yeah,
and also, how is this really superior to radio communication? But like, why is it seem like this is the next generation just because it's being the short messages are being typed out instead of radioed directly to someone?
I think that goes back to the cultural thing for that age group. And I mean, I'm old, but I definitely feel this. I'm more comfortable IMing, texting. I don't feel like I'm being as intrusive, and I'll be more assertive that way than I would if I had to pick up the phone and make a call, because I feel like I'm intruding in real time on someone's life. Now, given the life and death decisions that are being made here, real-time intrusions are important, but
yeah, because that's what surprised me, is the thing that they would be intruding on are like saying, hey, there are civilians there, don't bomb them. I mean, it seems like that should warrant a phone call, but instead they're just texting and hope that they're reading it.
It's faster. I mean, a phone call is good for a long and complicated discussion, but I mean, think about in your real life, when you just need to get some short information really quick, you text. Because it's less intrusive. You don't have to pick up a phone. And if these folks are monitoring a chat and they've got one window that's showing them all of the drones information coming in, and all they have to do is go, you know what? I think that's a road bomb. They type it in. It's quick. It's instantaneous. And there's none of that, you know, and it sounds silly, but picking up a phone and, you know, answering and finding, you know, trying to describe all that. You don't have to do anything to get the information. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
If you're really interested in this, P.W. Singer wrote an amazing book called Wired for War. And if you don't read the book, at least listen to the Fresh Air on NPR interview that they did with Singer. And we're going to have a link in the show notes. And he just talks about the cultural differences between traditional warfare and this kind of remote warfare. And I think a couple things are salient to the points you guys are making. One, think about multiplayer gaming. How do you communicate with people when you're multiplayer gaming best? Probably via chat or an open dialogue for constant communication. So I think that it's mirroring that experience. And secondly, the other thing in the article that I thought was really interesting is they've changed the protocol for the remote analysts, the folks who are back in Sacramento or wherever looking at the feeds and communicating with the folks on the front lines. They've actually had them start wearing fatigues and boots so that when they come to work, they create a change and a a uniform. They give people physical cues that they are in a battleground experience so that when they walk out of these 12-hour shifts that are incredibly intense and they have to actually change clothes before they go pick the kids up at soccer practice or go re-enter life. And it's they've recognized that this is a different animal than traditional soldiering. And I think that's kind of fascinating.
Windows Phone 7 Marketplace is going to operate under pretty much the same rules as the iPhone Marketplace. Membership will cost developers $99 per year. They'll be able to submit an unlimited number of paid applications with a 70-30 split. They'll get 5 free applications. Subsequent free applications will cost $20 to submit. Unlike Apple Store, the Marketplace also includes a mechanism to allow time-limited trial modes so that you can put up an app that you can have somebody download and use for 20 days for free before they have to pay for it. So is that a smart move for a company that has an app store that nobody really uses?
Well, that was one of the comments in the Ars Technica article said, you know, Microsoft creating porn-free store, also creating user-free store. So, I mean, creating any barrier to entry for Microsoft is risky, but they have to create what they think is the best marketplace environment. So I think it's a strategic decision. And I don't know.
Yeah, they've got to do something that opens up the ability for people to come into the Windows marketplace and develop for it again, not lock it down. And I understand that they're trying to get that quality of experience that Apple says they're after when they put in their restrictions, but being able to put in trial applications is the carrot. Like, hey, you can do that here. You can't do that in an Apple store. It's either on or it's off. The only way you can do a trial application is to give a free application that's the light version. You see that a lot, and then you have to buy the full application. And you know what, honestly, that works fine, don't you think?
I think people, it's all marketing. I think free trial actually really is a good concept for people. And free is good too, but there's always a catch. So it's a marketing decision.
Yes, as so many things are. like the Chinese government's marketing of internet addiction. This is actually not a marketing problem for them. This is a bigger problem. In China, their internet addiction is treated seriously, and there's several internet addiction treatment centers. Recently, however, a group of 14 patients at the Huayan Internet Addiction Treatment Center escaped, hailed a taxi to take them to a nearby town. However, the taxi driver took them to the police station instead because he was suspicious of all the identically dressed young men who were unable to pay the fare, mind you.
This guy has got some common sense. This is one of those classic kicker stories of a internet addiction camp. Are you kidding me? And then a jailbreak. It's great. I was trying to get more information about these camps and went to, I don't know, I'm on a New York Times spree, but they had a great article from 2007 quoting, patients overwhelmingly male and aged 14 to 19 wake up in dormitories at 6:15 a.m., do calisthenics, march on concrete, wearing khaki fatigues, drill sergeants bark orders at them when they're not attending counseling sessions. Therapy also includes patients simulating war games with laser guns.
Wow. So people who would rather be on the couch playing Warcraft getting yelled at and pulled out of bed at 6 a.m. It seems like a perfect cure.
So they can play laser tag.
The laser tag thing is probably a good idea. That might actually work.
So do we just not have internet addiction in the United States, just not seen as such a big problem?
Yeah, we definitely have it. There's even at least one or two treatment centers, but it is not recognized as a huge problem. I wouldn't call it addiction. I think that's where it becomes humorous when you call it internet addiction. I'd call it internet compulsion. And there definitely is a problem with people not being able to stop using the internet, but that doesn't have to do with the internet. It's not like alcohol or something where you're actually addicted.
It's people with a compulsive disorder
and they latch on to something, and in this case it's the internet.
There's one of the biggest trending articles on Facebook right now is about how the internet is changing our brain response chemistry and this behavior called seeking and how it, you know, lights up certain pleasure centers in the brain.
The reward center, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that the behavior that we engage in online is changing the way that our brains work. And so whenever you mess with the brain, there's going to be a spectrum of responses, some which will be compulsion, some which will be addiction, some which will be boredom and tuning out. And then there's a mainstream spectrum. So I give credence to the idea that there is a wide range of behavioral responses. Why China has camps for it, that is beyond the pale.
Well, it seems to make more sense. And I see what you're saying. If it's lighting up the reward center, there could be some biochemical basis there. I'm not sure I believe that or not. But if there was, then you might need to have some kind of treatment center. I'm not sure that yanking people out of bed at 4 a.m. is the answer. I think maybe there's other ways you could treat that.
Like taking away the kid's computer.
Kids, it's my dad. What are you, nuts?
Yeah, exactly. It's not always kids. One day after the iPhone 4 is announced, Sprint's Evo 4G sells out. There are no more 4D, no more Evos. You're going to have to wait at least 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, the 200,000 units available on launch weekend. And I tried to get corroboration of this from Sprint. Maybe they're calling me now.
Is that them? Do you need to take that?
It's probably my dad. He's ticked about that internet comment.
I'm not. He's calling you from Skype, though.
But basically, Sprint hasn't gotten back to me, but they say. But a lot of web outlets are saying, yes, that the Evo is sold out. Popular. Lots of talk about it in our chat room. People seem to love it.
Yeah, when I went to Best Buy, and they told me it would be 3 weeks before I could get one, and I didn't know if that was just a Best Buy thing on Friday, but it turns out, no, they just didn't make enough of them.
Got mine right here.
Look at that. Is that yours, or is that a vendor unit?
It's a vendor unit, okay. And I'm really just obsessed with the way the weather plays out. The weather on the HTC phones is the coolest thing ever. I just stare at it all day long.
Do you watch the Colbert Report?
Colbert Report? No.
Last night I happened to watch it, and it was awesome because he had a deal with Bing, and I wasn't sure at the time if it was real or not, but he said that Microsoft was going to give him $2,500 to donate to the Colbert Nation Gulf of America Fund, which is Stephen Colbert's way of helping out the oil spill in the Gulf. He calls it Gulf of America because he says, we broke it, we buy it. But anyway, every time he said Bing, he said Microsoft would pay him $2,500. And he just went crazy in saying the word Bing as much as possible, getting guests to say it. He had James Carville on and asked him, who sings White Christmas, James? To which James Carville, playing along, went, Bing, 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 Crosby. So there it is, $2,500, $5,000, $7,500. I offered a guest some Bing cherries. So anyway, I thought that was humorous.
Speaking of Colbert Report, I'm going to jump in with a calendar item right now. If you are a fan of Make Magazine or Maker Faire, Mark Frauenfelder, who's the, I'm sure just Mark Frauenfelder, I think that's how you say it, editor.
Yeah.
He's the editor of Make Magazine. He will be on Colbert Report tonight. I don't know what he's going to be talking about. Maybe Maker Faire, maybe just...
We need cool to get stuff. Colbert on this show.
Have I told you my Colbert story? That I was in the elevator with him at the ABC studios, and Charlie Gibson, the anchor for World News at that time, got onto the elevator and introduced himself to Stephen Colbert, like Colbert didn't know who he was. He says, hi, I'm Charles Gibson. They make like really awkward small talk. I'm standing in the corner, just fly on the wall watching all of this. Charlie Gibson gets out of the elevator, and Colbert turns to his handler and goes, that guy freaking hates me.
That's funny. I have a Colbert story, too, actually.
I'm the only one.
I interned there for 5 months.
Oh, you did? You're our in. Can you get him on the show?
Yeah. Say, oh, hey, remember that intern that was one of like 1,000 that you had that year? Yeah, yeah. We want you to do something.
You weren't the special intern. Okay.
No.
That's probably a good thing. Eric actually found this story. The boy who accidentally downloaded the $1,000 app for preparing for the bar exam. This is a danger story, a warning story about being careful what you download. Although it says in this story, at least from ABC 30 in Fresno, that the kid didn't have to put in his password to buy it. Was that?
Yeah, he was just charged $1,000.
The only reason that would happen is if somebody had already put in the password previously for something else recently,
and checked a little box saying remember password, don't ask for it every time.
Yeah,
there should be some sort of buyer's remorse clause on this.
Or maybe he needed to. Maybe this 11-year-old Nick Tucker was ready to take the bar exam. In which case, that's $1,000 well spent.
It'll come out of his allowance.
I just realized we just credited ABC Fresno and ABC 30 in Fresno, and the news director is a friend of mine. She goes to my church, so I just feel like I have just done the whole, like, you know, we've gone from the ABC station in Fresno to the New York Times and the Colbert Report along the way. We have dropped some serious names.
You're such
today.
A name dropper. Well, the good news here, by the way, is that Apple gave them a full refund immediately as soon as they called and explained the situation. Apple is pretty good about that kind of stuff. You can get refunds on apps if you have a good reason, and this is certainly a good reason.
Yeah, if you might go public with it like this and be on the news.
Going public is just what Brian McCrary wanted to do when he wanted to complain about his $90 speeding ticket he received from the Bluff City Police Department. And he lucked into finding out that the Bluff City Police Department's website, BluffCityPD.com, was about to go up for re-registration. So he sniped it. And now he owns BluffCityPD.com and has a site up complaining about his $90 speeding ticket.
I just tried to go to it and I 404'd, so I don't know what's...
Oh, yeah, I got slash dotted, boing, boing. Yeah, I mean, you name it. You can't get to that site today. He doesn't have enough bandwidth to keep it up. But I don't think any of us have actually seen it because it's just been getting hit too hard.
I wonder if this goes with the whole story a couple weeks ago about the guy who got his car towed and put a terrible review up about it online and then got sued. So I wonder if this type of sort of vindictive online behavior, whether it's grabbing somebody's URL, I'm sure this is not, you know, there's nothing that anyone could come after him about, but it's definitely a trend, sort of web revenge.
Yeah. Web revenge is a big thing. There could be a doctoral thesis for somebody out there with that. All right, on to the calendar, Becky. We mentioned Mark Fraunfelder earlier. What else is on the calendar?
Yeah, well, it's Internet Week this week in New York, and we'll let them get started, and we'll have some reports coming later this week, hopefully some folks who are attending. Secondly, E3 starts next week, and Sunday night, I just was talking to the folks at Microsoft, Sunday night, they're going to be having a Cirque du Soleil Project Natal debut.
Huh?
Where Cirque du Soleil has an interpretive performance.
Is that because you look like you're in Cirque du Soleil when you use Project Natal, waving your arms all around?
Definitely some contortionism going on.
Yeah.
So they'll be doing that. I'm going to see if Leo and company want to come with me to that. And then Monday, I'm going to be debuting Project Natal on GMA. And we'll
look at you.
I know. We'll
announce the
new name, and we'll announce all the new games. And
do you
we'll
know the name?
If I told you, I'd have to kill you, Tom.
But no, I'm not going to try to make you, because I don't want you to get fired. But
don't make me.
But do you know it right now?
Absolutely not.
Okay, good.
You think they trust me with that kind of information? The blabbermouth.
Well, you never know.
I got.
You never know. Yeah, you shouldn't trust reporters ever.
No. Speaking of which, I promised gossip in the pre-show yesterday from the Apple WWDC, and I didn't give any. And the gossip I had was that Steve is so not juicy. So gossip is the wrong word. But Steve Jobs called Jonathan Ivey during the presentation, and it looked like Ivey was across the world as they demonstrated video calling.
He was in Paris or Singapore or something, right?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you have to show off the capability of this phone. But then after the event was over and I was like the last person leaving the magic room where all the new phones were, out walks Jonathan Ivey.
He was just in the next room. Well, you know, it's the technology still works, right? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, whatever.
You know, they did that with Phil Schiller when they first demonstrated the iChat video for the first time.
I remember
he was just
that.
Like right backstage.
Yeah. All right, on to our voicemail. You can call us 260-TNT-SHOW. What is that actual number? It's 260-868-7469. Leave us a voicemail like this anonymous person did, but leave your name.
Hey, Tom and company. This is Cody from Pittsburgh, and I was surprised yesterday that there wasn't more of an emphasis on gaming with the iPhone 4 presentation. If I'm Nintendo, I am high-fiving everybody at HQ and wiping a little sweat off of our brow in anticipation of the E3 presentation. Just a thought. Thanks.
That was not an anonymous person. That was a different voicemail than the one that we meant to play. But good point about the gaming. Although there was plenty of gaming. They did Guitar Hero and Jenga, right?
Oh, yeah. The Jenga was just, Job said, some app that the developers sort of kludged together for him to demo the gyroscope.
I guess they could have had a more impressive demonstration of gaming on the gyroscope, but that'll come.
And I think people were kind of wondering what the implementation of the gyroscope would actually, how that would manifest in true gaming. But I guess they didn't pre-release the API to the developers, so you know it doesn't look like anybody had anything ready to go.
Do we have the other voice?
Yes, we do, and okay. It's actually very closely related.
This one is totally anonymous.
Hey, TNT crew. I was just wanting to make a quick comment on the gyroscope on the new iPhone 4. You guys were talking about what possible uses it would have. And other than gaming being the obvious use, I was wondering if the gyroscope could be used with the camera for enhanced image stabilization, which would be nice for photos, videos, and especially video calls. There are a few blogs that pointed that out. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that. Love the show. Bye.
Well, we found out, Becky, you were looking this up beforehand, different kind of gyroscope, right?
Right. I'm really curious if anybody has thoughts on this. And I'll say what I think the situation is, and I'm totally open to being corrected and wrong. So here's my understanding of this. So in traditional cameras that have gyroscopes for image stabilization, and I'm thinking of like I was out shooting the Maverick surf contest once when HDNet had a bunch of cameras on gyroscopes that were in Zodiac so that the horizon stayed level even though the Zodiacs were going up and down in the surf, and that was a physical mechanism that acted as a counterbalance to the camera so that it stayed stable the entire time they were shooting. I'm not sure that the actual gyroscope in the iPhone 4 is a physical device or if it's a software-based device, how it works. It doesn't seem to me
it's not attached to the camera in any case.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It seems like this is a gyroscope that does image stabilization, to my understanding, is a physical thing that counterbalances, yeah, as opposed to a software device that sort of interpolates 360 three-dimensional positioning. So, you know what? You can either tweet an answer to me and be Whirly on Twitter, or send something to the show if you have a better explanation of why we don't think this gyroscope will help with image stabilization in the iPhone camera.
Yeah, it's definitely a hardware. The gyroscope is hardware because the gyroscope is a piece of hardware. But whether it actually can affect image stabilization on the iPhone 4 or not is the question we're looking to have answered. So if you know this somehow, let us know.
We'll give you smarty pants points if
absolutely
you tell us.
Absolutely. On to the emails to tnt@twit.tv. That's the email address. You can send one to us like Rhinus did. Rhinus, I'm not mispronouncing his name. It's R-I-N-U-S. Well, I might be mispronouncing it, but I'm not like mispronouncing Linus. His name is Rhinus from South Africa.
Might be Rhinus.
Could be Rhinus. That's true, actually. I'm going to say that because it sounds better. Rhinus says, love the show and all that. I just want to share that here in South Africa, we've had video calling for 5 years now. I used to do it on my Nokia N70 on 3G. Now, I know things are different in Africa, and it's easier to get data out to rural areas via wireless means, which drives 3G penetration. But I find it very quaint that Apple is making such a big fuss about this, and only on Wi-Fi. We've stopped calling via video years ago, by the way. It was a fun distraction, but hardly practical. Also, we were never charged extra for video calling on 3G. As far as I remember, the video stream was sent via 3G while the voice was sent via 2G. So there you go. You're getting laughed at by South Africans, Apple. The Springboks are taking you down.
You're just talking trash because you got your All Black shirt on there, Mr.
I wasn't
New
talking
Zealand.
Trash about the South Africans, though. Although,
well, you know, rugby fans that we are cumulatively, yeah, here, we have to mention that.
They did a good job hosting the Rugby World Cup.
Yeah. I think it is interesting, though, that the bigger issue, and we've known this, that Nokia cameras have had video functionality for a while. And the question is this a concept whose time has finally come? Is the fact that it was just a novelty in the past when used in countries that have more developed cell data networks and cell networks, is that a byproduct of the fact that we weren't ready for video calling? And now that sort of Skype has laid a groundwork where people understand the value in computer-to-computer video conferencing, that now they're ready for phone-based video conferencing. I always look at new innovations like this. This is not revolutionary. It's evolutionary, and it's got to be 90% timing if it works.
I
agree or disagree?
I think this is just going to be something that's very niche. I think you're going to use it when you want to see grandma or the kids or your wife when you're traveling or this or that. I don't think it's going to be that useful on a cell phone to have video calling, because it's not even that useful to have phone calling a lot of the time. Just audio, the places are too loud. You can't hear people. You can't get good reception. I think people tend to text message first before they get to that complicated, like we were talking about earlier, complicated sense that they need to phone call. So I don't think video calling is going to be all that widespread the way we thought of it in the Dick Tracy days.
Three words for you. Video booty call.
Yeah, well, then there's that. Mm-hmm. You got one more email to read before we get out of here.
I like how you didn't let me extrapolate at all.
Try as you might.
Oh, this is me. I'm reading.
Yes, that was why I said that
you
have one more email to read.
Hello, TNT Bomb Squad. From episode 5, one way to get around receiving spam on your email-enabled HP printer would be to encrypt the email with OpenPGP or the like, and then include a password or key phrase in the message text along with the document to print. You could print from any device capable of encrypting emails. Instead of using a whitelist. Love the show so far. That's a caveat there. And this is from Todd in Chicago. What do you think? PGP?
Yeah, I think it's great. No, I think that's a great idea. And it's something that the HP printers should support, because, you know, if you're going to use this email technology, you want to make it secure. You don't want your stuff that you're being sent to the printer oftentimes is very sensitive documents. You want to make sure it's locked up tight and nobody can get to it. So I think that's a very easy, available and free way to secure that printing up.
You are on crack if you think that is easy for the mass of the population.
You know,
as soon as you say PGP, as soon as you say encryption, people freak out. This is a 10% of the population solution. No?
But no. You put in the plug-in in Thunderbird, and it can be built in. That's what I'm saying. You know, you're thinking, oh, everybody has to go compile their own key servers and all of that. But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it has to be built into the printer and built into your email software, which it can be, and then you don't have to know anything about it.
That's fine. That I buy. That should be part of the deal. Agreed.
And I am on crack. That's true.
That's also agreed.
All right. We've run long. Thank you, everybody, for watching Tech News today. Don't forget, you can visit us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and call us 260-TNT-SHOW. Thanks to Eric for producing today. Thanks to Becky for being around. And thanks to Leo for letting us on the network. And most of all, thanks to you for watching or listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Well, gee, Dad, I really like Twit's new show, Tech News Today, but I don't know how to get in touch with him.
Why, there's nothing to it, son.
260 TNT Show, or TNT at twit.tv. 260 TNT Show, or TNT at twit.tv.